morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today we're going to talk about St. John Henry Newman with Chris Bergwald. It's an interesting story of the saint and how he influences our lives today in ways that we might not even understand. So hope you will stick around for that conversation. Renee Kranz will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Sunday, this first Sunday in Advent. Brianna Wingen with the first and second reading, Deacon Bill Radio with the gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Isaiah. This is what Isaiah, son of Amos, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. In the days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established as the highest mountain and raised above the hills. All nations shall stream toward it. Many peoples shall come and say, "Come, let us climb the Lord's mountain, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may instruct us in his ways, and we may walk in his paths. For from Zion shall go forth instruction, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations, and impose terms on many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. One nation shall not raise the sword against another, nor shall they train for war again. O house of Jacob, come, let us walk in the light of the Lord." The word of the Lord. A reading from the second letter of St. Paul to the Romans. Brothers and sisters, you know the time. It is the hour now for you to awake from sleep, for our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is advanced, the day is at hand. Let us then throw off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us conduct ourselves properly as in the day, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in promiscuity and lust, not in rivalry and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the desires of the flesh. The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, "As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. In those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day that Noah entered the ark. They did not know until the flood came and carried them all away. So will it be also at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be out in the field, one will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and one will be left. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know on which day your Lord will come. Be sure of this: if the master of the house had known the hour of night when the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and not let his house be broken into. So too, you also must be prepared, for at an hour you do not expect, the Son of Man will come." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week, from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Renee Kranz.
The 2019 Youth Conference, Come Follow Me, took over the Swiftel Center in Brookings in early November. Around 1,000 youth and adult leaders from parishes throughout the diocese were treated to Speaker Chris Bartlett, Josh Blakesley and his band, confession, Eucharistic adoration, Mass with Bishop Paul Swain, and a walk with the saints, and a dance party to finish it off. While the world knows Nagasaki as the site of a U.S. atomic bomb blast, for the Catholic Church, it is also the site of one of the fiercest campaigns of anti-Christian persecution. Visiting the city November 24th, Pope Francis paused for prayer on the hill where St. Paul Miki and 25 others were crucified in 1597. Hundreds more were killed in the decades that followed. For more than 200 years, there was not a single Catholic priest in Japan, but small communities of hidden Christians kept Catholicism alive by secretly baptizing their children and teaching them the faith. When priests finally were allowed to return to Japan, not all the hidden Christians joined the parishes they established, preferring to preserve the family-focused faith they had learned from their ancestors. Small groups of them still exist today. On a cold, rainy morning at the Martyrs' Memorial, Pope Francis said the place is not so much a reminder of death as of the promise of eternal life in Jesus. A man who scrubbed toilets and shoveled sidewalks at Creighton Durham Hall High School in St. Paul, Minnesota, is on his way to becoming a saint, and the school is celebrating his beatification by elevating his presence on campus and connecting students to his legacy. Christian brother James Miller taught at the high school from 1966 to 1971 and again from 1979 to 1980, teaching Spanish, founding the soccer team, and serving as maintenance supervisor. Brother Miller was martyred in 1982 at age 37 during the Guatemalan Civil War. Three hooded men found him on a ladder repairing a wall and shot him. Many assume he was killed because he fought to keep his students from being forced into the military. Pope Francis officially recognized Brother James as a martyr last year, clearing the way for beatification. He will be beatified on December 7th in Guatemala. Since the sexual abuse crisis in the Catholic Church broke open in 2002 in the United States and intensified globally last year, responses to it have focused on legal matters and administrative reforms. But theologians and other faithful thinkers are focusing now on a higher dimension and the question of where God is calling his people at this moment. Villanova University launched the first of a series of four conferences on the theological perspectives of the sexual abuse crisis November 1st. Some 20 Catholic scholars from around the world heard a dozen presentations on the topic in a day-long seminar. In the keynote talk to cap the first conference, Father Richard Lennon said the long-term response of the Christian community to the crisis should be an inner conversion of heart and fearless self-criticism. With all the news a Catholic can use, I'm Renee Kranz with the Bishop's Bulletin.
All right, Renee, thanks for that. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Dr. Chris Bergwald. We're going to talk about one of the newer saints, St. John Henry Newman. Chris, this has been on our docket for a while to have this conversation about John Henry Newman. He's an interesting character. He has...
Most saints are.
True. But I mean, his story, I think, is really right. A fascinating one. And people may recognize the name because, of course, he's associated with Newman Centers.
Yep.
And we'll talk about that a little bit, how that came to be. But maybe people don't know kind of his backstory,
right?
The fact that he was an Anglican for a good chunk of his life.
Anglican clergyman. Yeah, minister. Yeah, he, 19th century British. He had been, as you just said, Jerry, an Anglican clergyman for many, many years of his life, and I think this is part of one of the things that's fascinating about him is that he was sort of seen, if you're going to use, as many people do, right or wrong, use political terminology and try to apply it to church life, he was seen as sort of a pretty conservative Anglican, mm-hmm. really trying to call, in a good way, frankly, Anglicans back to their roots, where we come from, the importance of sacraments, the importance of doctrine, of dogma, and so on. And people were like, you sound like a Catholic. Well, and eventually in 1845, he became a Catholic. But then as a Catholic, he was similarly sort of uncomfortable because he was, I guess maybe because clergy converts weren't common then the way they are in our time today, but he was sort of looked at, you know, sideways by Catholics, like,
Are you real?
Really? Like, and I don't know why they thought he would have converted if it wasn't. I mean, in England at that time, it wasn't like it was a great thing to convert to Catholicism. But in any case, he was sort of looked at askance as a convert. Are you real? And he was sort of seen as a bit of a quote unquote liberal. As a Catholic, an emphasis on the importance of conscience, that we don't literally do everything that the popes don't ask us to do every little thing. Like, there's just a good awareness of what the church teaches and the great tradition and staying within that and so on. And again, he was sort of looked at by many of his brothers and sisters in the Catholic Church as a bit of a liberal.
And so is he... would we consider him a scholar? Is that where we another term?
Or intellectual?
We could use?
Yeah, intellectual? I think intellectual is definitely also part of that. And you know, I think that was part of the issue with him. You know, I think in so often in the world of ministry, we talk about the importance of bearing fruit. Jesus said we're supposed to bear fruit. Mm-hmm. And yet for Newman, I think particularly because of his intellectual life, it wasn't obvious what fruit he was bearing, I don't think, to him. I don't think during his lifetime. And yet he would bear great fruit in his intellectual life. He's seen as sort of a forerunner of many of the themes of Vatican II, the Second Vatican Council in the 1960s, almost a century after his time. He's seen by many of the great theologians who were important at that council as sort of, again, a harbinger of things that were to come. Mm-hmm. But during his life, as an intellectual, as a clergyman, Anglican and then Catholic, he wasn't well understood.
I want to go back and talk a little bit about this whole the setting, if you will, because I think it probably is important in understanding Newman just a bit. England was mostly Anglican for a while,
right?
And then there was this sort of slow drip. Almost
yep.
of a reversion
yep.
in some degrees back
right.
to Catholicism.
Right.
Am I right in saying that?
Yeah. So
I think that has a factor in some of
this. I think it does too. I don't remember what year it was, Jay, but definitely by there was a time, well, for quite a time yeah. after the Reformation where it was illegal
right.
to be Catholic, and there were horrible things that were done.
A lot of martyrs.
By Newman's time, it had been legal once again to become Catholic, and there was sort of a slow drip is a good analogy metaphor of people becoming, I say, returning to the faith, but their families hadn't been Catholic for centuries at this point, but becoming Catholic. Mm-hmm. Now, I think also bears it's worth noting that even in the 19th century in England, there is also probably a more steady drip, maybe a bit of a flow to indifferentism, mm-hmm. to what we now call the nuns,
right.
of lack of religious observance. So it's one of the things even already in the 19th century peculiar about not unique to, I guess, but definitely a characteristic of British religious practice is you're registered as a Catholic or as an Anglican, but you never go to church. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about Christmas and Easter Christians. That in 19th century already, that was common for people to be registered. That was part of the environment as well.
But within the church, within the Anglican church, even mm-hmm. at that time, there was almost the high and the low too, right?
Yep.
And so he would have been considered part
high.
Of the high, where
yep.
liturgy is very important. And there's others in the Anglican belief, and maybe they've become other, you know, maybe they're Methodists or some other form of Anglicanism.
Anglicanism.
Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't say that. But so there was a fracturing in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, there was definitely, like, those are probably the two primary streams, if you will, of Anglican life. High Anglicanism, which is very Catholic. Some call themselves Anglo-Catholics.
Yep.
But then Low Anglicanism, which is more of, when we think of maybe like evangelical Protestantism,
yeah.
that'd be more of the Low Anglicanism, where your liturgy is not nearly as ritual as the Catholic Mass is, as High Anglican worship is, much more, yeah, maybe Methodist, but even less liturgical than even Methodism was at the time.
And so I guess that maybe that helps explain why there was suspicion
sure.
a bit around
sure.
around Newman and who he really was.
Yep, because he was definitely a high Anglican mm-hmm. as an Anglican clergyman.
Yeah, interested in the liturgy. And so it, in a sense, made him, I don't know if suspect is the right word, but at least in a different category.
He was. And he wasn't alone. I mean, there was something called the Oxford Movement. He was a leader of that in the Anglicans. And so he wasn't alone in that, but definitely there were other Anglicans who would have disagreed with him about that for sure.
Yeah. And now let's fast forward to today.
Yep.
And we have Anglicans who have become, there's a separate rite within
right.
the Catholic Church, in a sense, to bring some of the rest of the Anglicans back in.
And that does tend to be more of what's still called the high Anglicans, because their forms of worship are already so similar to the Mass that doesn't take much at all for them to enter into full communion in terms, frankly, of doctrine or of liturgy.
But can we make a connection to what's happened today for them and Newman? Can we make that connection?
I definitely think yes.
Okay.
Yes. There's in many ways, again, this is, I think, the fruits of his Catholicism, his Catholic faith, not bearing fruit, as much fruit during his life as they would subsequently.
After the fact.
So I think there are a lot of ways in which the Anglican ordinariate within the Catholic Church, there are a lot of factors which contributed to it, but certainly John Henry Newman was one of them.
All right. Where to start to talk about some of that influence that began to be seen as time went on?
So I think, and then this has been pointed out by a number of figures. Like Bishop Robert Barron is a great example. Bishop Barron's he's got a little course that you can learn about Newman, articles, videos. And Bishop Barron is, theologically speaking, a very strong Thomist. Mm-hmm. So Thomist, a follower of the thought of St. Thomas Aquinas. Newman wasn't. Newman was not really a Thomist in at least the specific or narrower sense. So the fact that somebody like today, Bishop Barron, can look back on somebody like Cardinal Newman, who, again, a faithful Catholic, so it's not like you have to be a Thomist, but he was a faithful Catholic, and yet he was able to bring maybe his own almost unique theological perspective to bear on the problems of the church in his time. And in turn, then that thought, because the problems of the church in his time anticipated the problems of the church in our own time, that thought would, as I said earlier, bear fruit in the years leading up to and at the Second Vatican Council. What does it mean to be a Catholic in the Western world? Mm-hmm. In Newman's case, the late 19th century. In our case, the late 20th, early 21st century. What does it mean to hold to these doctrines? So this is, again, Newman's emphasis on the ancient faith of the church. Newman's most famous lines is, to be steeped in history is to cease to be Protestant. Hmm. So to be aware of the origins of Christianity, to him, it was very clear then that that's part, big part of what led him into the Catholic Church. So when we live from that, but in our own circumstance, in our life, when we live our faith out in the world, especially for you and me as lay men and lay women, what does that look like?
Yeah.
I think that's much of what he was trying to do. Because again, he's a clergy, he's a pastor, he's a priest.
Right.
So a priest is certainly a scholar, an intellectual, but who's bringing all of that to bear on the life of the faithful.
It's interesting you use the term history, because I was, as you were talking, I'm thinking there's a bit of a prophetic in him in way things have played out, as you right. referenced. And yet, what's that based in? It's based in his knowledge of
history.
Of history.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. He was a deep, one of his most famous books is an essay on the doctrine of development, understanding the doctrine of how when we look at the past and what the church has believed in the past, we see how there's never reversal, but there's growth, there's deepening in understanding. And so he was, I don't know if he's the first, but one of the ones who popularized the idea, sort of an organic deepening, like our faith is alive, it's living, it's not... On the one hand, it's not ossified. It's not, you know, like fixed in stone,
right.
in a sense. On the other hand, it is what it is. And as it grows, it never becomes something other than what it is. So it's the same faith that's deepened in terms of how we understand it and how we live it out.
We're talking about St. John Henry Newman with Chris Bergwald this morning on Catholic Views. Let's talk a little bit about Newman Centers, because if people are familiar with the name... John Henry Newman, it's probably because they've heard of Newman Centers.
Or maybe you're being, oh, so that's why they're called, this is why they're called Newman Centers.
There you go.
It's so, because of the cardinal, now Saint John Henry Newman.
Okay.
So
how did that come to be?
He one of the, his, early on as a Catholic, he gave a series of lectures which were collected under the title, The Idea of a University, where he set forth his understanding of what a Christian Catholic university should entail. And honestly, Jerry, I'm not sure how in the 20th century things sort of aligned, but certainly by the 50s, at least in our part of the country, in the United States, you had this idea of taking his idea of what a university should be and applying it then to how can we take, in our country, public schools, state schools, but for the Catholics there and anybody else, frankly, mm-hmm. how can we offer sort of something that supplements, complements what they're receiving in their public school education with a Catholic vision of reality. So it's, I think it's important to understand that a Newman Center is not just a place for college kids to receive the sacraments.
Right.
They can go. They could just go to the parish in town for that.
There's some intentionality about formation.
Exactly. That's the perfect word. Phrase. There's intentionality about formation. So there's these young men and women are receiving their education in whatever degree they're pursuing. They're also receiving education, a formation in the Catholic faith as young men and women. So that's what our Newman centers are all about. Taking Newman's, how can we take his, what he said about the idea of the ideal view of a university and offer it to those who maybe are going to one of our great state schools?
Here's a personal anecdote to kind of help us with this. I remember my brother, who was attending SDSU, and the Newman director at the time was Monsignor Mahold.
Oh, yes.
He wasn't Monsignor Mahold at that point, but guess who he studied? Guess who his thesis was on when he did his graduate work?
Newman. Right.
And so he was there applying this, and I remember I was quite young at the time, but I remember my brother was into it.
Right.
If
right.
you will. It,
right.
it meant something to him.
Yep. Yeah, it really, I mean, this is a, it's, it, well, I, it, sometimes I struggle. Is this the most important time in our life? I don't know. What time is the most important time?
Right.
But it's
the time
an
we're
important
living in.
Time. Exactly. Exactly. So we should always, you and I have talked many times, we should always be deepening our faith. But certainly, I think, especially in our day and age, Jerry, when we're of college age, to be able to receive not only sort of more secular formation, degree-oriented formation, but also formation which is not, frankly, it's not just about understanding what the church teaches. It's deeper than that. It's the part Newman's vision was deeper than that. It's about the sacramental life, the spiritual life, and so on.
Was Newman one who really believed in the personal relationship with Jesus? Could we ascribe that to
oh,
him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He definitely, no, and to be
maybe
honest,
not in those words.
I don't know if he used the term, but he definitely, that was part of it for him, as it has been for every great Christian, every saint.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's a given.
It's how it's expressed. How it's expressed, yeah. And I don't know if Newman ever used that terminology, but those ideas are definitely there.
Let's talk a little bit today about how Newman is viewed, and you've alluded to this a little bit, that sometimes political terms are used, and Newman's one of these characters where, character isn't the right word, he's a saint, but he's somebody who, some folks from what you would say is the left, and some folks you would say maybe from the right, they both find something to borrow, to use, or even to claim him.
Yep.
Am I right?
Yeah, and I think they also, both sides also can find something in him that they, so that's why I think that's why he's a bit of a quizzical figure for not all, but for some in the church. And yeah, on the other hand, I think there's a way to see, he shows how it's not about political labels, Jerry. I mean, he was and is a faithful Catholic intellectual clergyman.
Yeah.
And a priest. And therefore, although he had maybe perspectives that we would categorize as conservative or liberal today, it was more about what is true and how can I help people live it most faithfully.
So in a sense, the political stuff wasn't what interested him.
No, not at all. No, not at all.
So if there's application of it today, it's on the people doing it, not on Newman.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, so most definitely so. So I think for today, he is looked at, as you said, as I mentioned earlier, he's looked at both sides, if you will, all sides borrow some things from Newman. But just over the course of his, I'm really, one of the great reasons I'm grateful for Pope Francis canonizing Newman is he's a thinker who I actually haven't studied very deeply myself. And a lot of the commentary around his canonization has really piqued my own curiosity and interest in studying him. So as we're recording this, it's not quite Advent, but right now I'm thinking, I'll have to discern this, but Newman might maybe be a figure for me to get to know a little bit better during this Advent. And I want to be clear about that, something about what I just said there.
Yep.
He's alive.
Yeah.
He's not just a distant historical figure. He is that who now is alive in Christ in heaven. So I can get to know Newman, not merely in the sense of understanding his lifetime over 100 years ago, not just in the sense of understanding his writings and his thought 100 years ago, but in the sense of understanding the man who lived over 100 years ago and is still alive today.
So it brings us back to this conversation, if you will, about saints and how they're meant to help us.
Right.
I mean, that's the point you're trying to make. And I think some might look at Newman and say, well, he's just beyond me. I mean, he's this intellectual. How in the world do I connect to a guy like that? But he does have writings that I think are approachable to the average person, and you may find insight in it.
Right. Right. And one of, so this is a, I'm glad you said that, because one of the things that I had never frankly even heard of, it's a meditation of his, that he wrote that I think is very approachable. It's called The Mission of My Life, a short meditation on Mission of My Life. And, there's a priest, an American priest, Father Billy Swan, who wrote a really, just beautiful, Unpacking One of Newman's Gems is the title of the article. Yeah. But just he's a priest, so who's an intellectual. So the intellectual, he's got the books that probably are beyond many of us.
Right.
But he's also got the sermons. He's got the meditations like this one, which are very approachable.
And some beautiful prayers.
Yeah.
I've seen some of his prayers, and they're quite heartfelt and quite beautiful.
Right. So even though he does have maybe the dense intellectual work that might be above many of us, he also has a number of things which are very approachable and would allow you to understand him, and then he would say, more importantly, the Lord better.
And that's what it's always about, of course, Amen. Leading us to Jesus Christ. St. John Henry Newman is worth checking out. I hope this conversation helped people understand a little bit more about him. Chris Bergold, as always, thanks so much.
You bet, Jerry.
Renee, here we are, first Sunday of Advent. Hard to believe.
It's crazy.
Yeah, but a great moment for us to take advantage of our faith.
Yes, it's time to wait for the Lord. Yeah. So we have lots of tips on how to do that in the upcoming bulletin.
Yeah, exactly. I hope people take advantage of some of that.
Yes, there's some good stuff to just get close to the Lord in that time.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many other ways, of course, people can do Advent well.
Yes.
Prayer opportunities in our parishes, and hope people take advantage of that. That's our time for Catholic Views today. We'll be back next Sunday.